Chapter 3. Early Religious Productions, Miscellanies, Notes on the Scriptures, Commencement of His Preaching, Resolutions. A conscientious regard to duty appeared greatly in the early as well as in the latter days of Jonathan Edwards. As a child, the spirit of love and obedience uniformly guided him. And as a pupil, he discovered every disposition honorable to himself, encouraging to those who anxiously watched over his progress, and which was justly considered as the earnest of uncommon attainments. The child, the youth, the man, all presented to view the same superior mind, in different degrees of advancement, but still alike indicative of the same general excellencies. While at college, he paid a most assiduous and successful attention to his assigned duties, and particularly to the study of mental and physical philosophy. Yet he still found time for pursuits of a more elevated and spiritual character. His whole education from early infancy, and the counsels of his parents, as well as his own feelings, prompted him to these pursuits. To read the Bible daily, and to read it in connection with other religious books, diligently and attentively, on the Sabbath, was made, in the earlier days of New England, the habitual duty of every child. And his father's family, though not inattentive to the due cultivation of mind and manners, had lost none of the strictness, or conscientiousness, which characterized the Pilgrims. The books which he found in his father's house, the conversation of ministers often resorting to the house, the custom of the times, as well as the more immediate influence of parental instruction and example, naturally prompted a mind like his to the early contemplation and investigation of many of the truths and principles of theology. He had also witnessed in his father's congregation, before his admission to college, several extensive revivals of religion. And in two of them the impressions made on his own mind had been unusually deep and solemn. The name familiarly given by the plain people of New England to these events, a religious attention, and a general attention to religion, indicates their nature. And those personally acquainted with them need not be informed that during their progress, the great truths of religion, as taught in the Scriptures, and as explained in the writings of theologians, become the objects of general and intense interest, and of close practical study. Or that the knowledge, acquired by a whole people at such a time, in a comparatively little period, often exceeds the acquisitions of many previous years. With all these things in view, it is not surprising that, to these two kinds of reading, he devoted himself early, with great diligence and with great success. Two of his early resolutions relate to the subject, in which he proposes to study the Scriptures so steadily, constantly, and frequently, as that I may find and plainly perceive myself to grow in the knowledge of the same. He never lost sight of this resolution. On the 8th of June, 1723, he also proposes, whenever he finds himself in a dull, listless frame, to read over his own remarks and reflections of a religious nature, in order to quicken him in his duty. These remarks and reflections were very numerous. The first manuscript of his miscellanies is in folio, and consists of 44 sheets of foolscap, written separately, and stitched together. When he began the work, he had obviously no suspicion of the size to which it was to grow, nor had he formed his ultimate plan of arrangement. He headed his first article, Of Holiness. And having finished it, and drawn a line of separation across the page, he commenced the second, Of Christ's Mediation and Satisfaction. The same is done with the third and fourth. The fifth he writes, without a line of separation, in larger letters, Spiritual Happiness. After that the subject of each new article is printed, or written, in larger letters. His first article was written on the second page of a loose sheet of paper. And having written over the second, third, and fourth pages, he went back to the first. He began to number his articles by the letters of the alphabet, A, B, C, and having gone through, he commenced with a double alphabet, A, B, B, C, C. When this was finished, finding his work enlarged, he took the regular numbers, 1, 2, 3, etc., and this plan, both as to subjects and numbers, is afterwards continued. The beginning of the work is written in a remarkably small round hand, nearly the same with that in which his earliest productions are written. This extends through about the first 150 articles, and is soon after perceptibly changed, into a hand somewhat more formed and flowing. These appear obviously to have been written during the last years of his college life, and the 2 years of his residence at college as Bachelor of Arts. Large extracts from this work will be found in the present edition of his works, and a number of them from the earlier articles. Such are the Miscellaneous Observations, and the Miscellaneous Remarks, Volume 2, page 459, and the Miscellaneous, page 525. In these will be found many of his most original and most profound thoughts and discussions on theological subjects. His regular and diligent study of the sacred scriptures led him early to discover that they open before him an almost boundless field of investigation and inquiry. Some passages he found to be incorrectly rendered. Many were very obscure and difficult in explanation. In many there were apparent inconsistencies and contradictions. Many had been long employed as proofs of doctrines and principles to which they had no possible reference. The words and phrases, as well as the sentiments and narratives, on one part, he saw illustrated and interpreted those of another. The Old Testament, in its language, history, doctrines, and worship, in its allusions to manners and customs, in its prophecies, types, and images, he perceived to be introductory and explanatory of the New. While the New, by presenting the full completion of the whole plan and design of their common author, unfolded the real drift and bearing of every part of the Old. Regarding the sacred volume with the highest veneration, he appears to have resolved, while a member of college, that he would, as far as possible, possess himself, in every part of it which he read, of the true meaning of its author. With this view he commenced his notes on the Scriptures, obviously making it his standing rule to study every passage which he read which presented the least difficulty to his own mind, or which he had known to be regarded as difficult by others, until such difficulty was satisfactorily removed. The result of his investigations he regularly, and at the time, committed to writing, at first in separate half-sheets, folded in 4:2. But having found the inconvenience of this in his other juvenile writings, he soon formed small pamphlets of sheets, which were ultimately made into volumes. A few of the articles, to the number of about 50, appear to have been written while he was in college. The rest, while preparing for the ministry, and during his subsequent life. That he had no suspicion when he began of the size to which the work would grow, is plain, and whether he afterwards formed the design of publishing it, as an illustration of the more difficult and obscure passages of the Bible, perhaps cannot be determined with certainty. A few of the articles of an historical or mythological nature are marked as quotations from the writings of others, and are omitted in the present edition of his works. The reader, after perusing the work, will be satisfied that they are the fruit of his own investigations, and that his mode of removing difficulties was, dash not as it too often is, by disguising or misstating them, but by giving them their full force, and meeting them with fair argument. Perhaps no collection of notes on the Scriptures so entirely original can be found. From the number prefixed to each article, it will be found easy to select those which were the result of his early labors. Such a plan of investigating and explaining the difficulties of the sacred volume, at so early a period of life, was probably never formed in any other instance, and evinces a maturity of intellectual and moral attainments, not often paralleled. Among the most interesting and able of these investigations will be found the discussion of the sacrifice of the daughter of Jephthah, Judges 11:29-40, and that on the principle advanced by Paul in Romans 8:28, that all things work together for good to them that love God, which has been contained in his letter to Mr. Gillespie of September 4, 1747, is omitted in the notes on the Scriptures. The class of which Edwards was a member finished their regular collegiate course in September 1720, before he was 17 years of age. At that period, and for a long time afterwards, the only exercise, except the Latin theses, given at the public commencement to the class of bachelors, was the salutatory, which was also a valedictory, oration in Latin. This exercise was awarded to Edwards as sustaining the highest rank as a scholar among the members of the class. He resided at college nearly 2 years after he took his first degree, preparing himself for the work of the ministry. After which, having passed the customary trials, he received a license to preach. This was in the 19th year of his age. in consequence of an application from a number of ministers in New England, who were entrusted to act in behalf of the Presbyterians in New York, he went to that city in the beginning of August, 1722, and preached there with great acceptance, about 8 months. While there he found a most happy residence in the house of a Mrs. Smith, whom, as well as her son Mr. John Smith, he regarded as persons of uncommon piety and purity of life, and with whom he formed an intimate Christian friendship. There also he found a considerable number of persons, among the members of that church, exhibiting the same character, with whom he enjoyed, in a high degree, all the pleasures and advantages of Christian intercourse. His personal attachment to them became strong, and their interest in him as a man and a preacher was such that they warmly solicited him to remain with them for life. To decline their candid invitation was most distressing to his feelings. But on account of the smallness of that congregation and some peculiar difficulties which attended it, he did not think there was a rational prospect of usefulness and comfort. After a most painful parting with the kind friends, under whose hospitable roof he had so long and happily resided, he left the city on Friday, the 26th of April, by water, and reached his father's house on Wednesday, the 1st of May. Here he spent the summer in close study, during which he was again earnestly requested, by the congregation in New York, to return to that city, and settle among them. But his former views were not altered, and therefore, though strongly inclined from his own feelings to gratify them, he could not comply with their wishes. Probably in no part of his life had he higher advantage for spiritual contemplation and enjoyment than in the period first mentioned. He went to New York in a delightful frame of mind. He found there a little flock of Christ, constrained from a sense of their own weakness to dwell together in unity, and to feel a practical sense of their dependence on God. He was in the midst of a family, whose daily influence served only to refresh and to sanctify. He had also much leisure for religious reading, meditation, and prayer. In these circumstances, the presence of the Comforter appears to have been a daily reality, the evidence of which he found in the purity of heart which enables its possessor to see God, in the peace which passeth all understanding, and the joy with which a stranger intermeddleth not. During his preparation for the ministry, his residence in New York, and his subsequent residence in his father's house, he formed a series of resolutions, to the number of 70, intended obviously for himself alone, to regulate his own heart and life, but fitted also, from their Christian simplicity and spiritual mindedness, to be eminently useful to others. Of these, the first 34 were written before December 18, 1722, the time in which his diary, as it now exists, commences. The particular time and occasion of making many of the rest will be found in that most interesting narrative, in which also are many other rules and resolutions, intended for the regulation of his own affections, of perhaps equal excellence. It should be remembered they were all written before he was 20 years of age, as he was wholly averse to all profession and ostentation, and as these resolutions themselves were plainly intended for no other eye than his own, except the eye that is omniscient. They may be justly considered as the basis of his conduct and character, the plan by which he governed the secret as well as the public actions of his life. As such, they will deeply interest the reader, not only as they unfold the inmost mind of their author, but as they also show, in a manner most striking and convincing to the conscience, what is the true foundation of great and distinguished excellence. He was too well acquainted with human weakness and frailty, even where the intentions are most sincere, to enter on any resolutions rashly, or from a reliance on his own strength. He therefore in the outset looked to God for aid, who alone can afford success in the use of the best means, and in the intended accomplishment of the best purposes. This he places at the head of all his other important rules, that his whole dependence was on the grace of God, while he still proposes to recur to a frequent and serious perusal of them, in order that they might become the habitual directory of his life. Resolutions. Being sensible that I am unable to do anything without God's help, I do humbly entreat him, by his grace, to enable me to keep these resolutions, so far as they are agreeable to his will, for Christ's sake. Remember to read over these resolutions once a week. 1. Resolved, that I will do whatsoever I think to be most to the glory of God, and my own good, profit, and pleasure, in the whole of my duration, without any consideration of the time, whether now, or never so many myriads of ages hence. Resolved, to do whatever I think to be my duty, and most for the good and advantage of mankind in general. Resolved, so to do, whatever difficulties I meet with, how many soever, and how great soever. 2. Resolved, to be continually endeavoring to find out some new contrivance and invention to promote the forementioned things. 3. Resolved, if ever I shall fall and grow dull, so as to neglect to keep any part of these resolutions, to repent of all I can remember, when I come to myself again. 4. Resolved, never to do any manner of thing, whether in soul or body, less or more, but what tends to the glory of God, nor be, nor suffer it, if I can possibly avoid it. 5. Resolved, never to lose one moment of time, but to improve it in the most profitable way I possibly can. 6. Resolved, to live with all my might, while I do live. 7. Resolved, never to do anything, which I should be afraid to do if it were the last hour of my life. 8. Resolved, to act, in all respects, both speaking and doing, as if nobody had been so vile as I, and as if I had committed the same sins, or had the same infirmities or failings, as others, and that I will let the knowledge of their failings promote nothing but shame in myself, and prove only an occasion of my confessing my own sins and misery to God. Vid. July 30th. 9. Resolved, to think much, on all occasions, of my dying, and of the common circumstances which attend death. 10. Resolved, when I feel pain, to think of the pains of martyrdom, and of hell. 11. Resolved, when I think of any theorem in divinity to be solved, immediately to do what I can towards solving it, if circumstances do not hinder. 12. Resolved, if I take delight in it as a gratification of pride, or vanity, or on any such account, immediately to throw it by. 13. Resolved, to be endeavoring to find out fit objects of liberality and charity. 14. Resolved, never to do anything out of revenge. 15. Resolved, never to suffer the least motions of anger towards irrational beings. 16. Resolved, never to speak evil of anyone, so that it shall tend to his dishonor, more or less, upon no account except for some real good. 17. Resolved, that I will live so, as I shall wish I had done when I come to die. 18. Resolved, to live so, at all times, as I think is best in my most devout frames, and when I have the clearest notions of the things of the gospel, and another world. 19. Resolved, never to do anything, which I should be afraid to do, if I expected it would not be above an hour before I should hear the last trump. 20. Resolved, to maintain the strictest temperance in eating and drinking. 21. Resolved, never to do anything, which if I should see in another, I should count a just occasion to despise him for, or to think any way the more meanly of him. 22. Resolved, to endeavor to obtain for myself as much happiness in the other world as I possibly can, with all the power, might, vigor, and vehemence, yea violence, I am capable of, or can bring myself to exert, in any way that can be thought of. 23. Resolved, frequently to take some deliberate action, which seems most unlikely to be done, for the glory of God, and trace it back to the original intention, designs, and ends of it. And if I find it not to be for God's glory, to repute it as a breach of the fourth resolution. 24. Resolved, whenever I do any conspicuously evil action, to trace it back, till I come to the original cause. And then, both carefully endeavor to do so no more, and to fight and pray with all my might against the original of it. 25. Resolved, to examine carefully and constantly, what that one thing in me is, which causes me in the least to doubt of the love of God, and so direct all my forces against it. 26. Resolved, to cast away such things as I find do abate my assurance. 27. Resolved, never willfully to omit anything, except the omission be for the glory of God, and frequently to examine my omissions. 28. Resolved, to study the scriptures so steadily, constantly, and frequently, as that I may find, and plainly perceive, myself to grow in the knowledge of the same. 29. Resolved, never to count that a prayer, nor to let that pass as a prayer, nor that as a petition of a prayer, which is so made, that I cannot hope that God will answer it, nor that as a confession which I cannot hope God will accept. 30. Resolved, to strive every week to be brought higher in religion, and to a higher exercise of grace, than I was the week before. 31. Resolved, never to say anything at all against anybody, but when it is perfectly agreeable to the highest degree of Christian honor, and of love to mankind, agreeable to the lowest humility, and sense of my own faults and failings, and agreeable to the golden rule. Often, when I have said anything against anyone, to bring it to, and try it strictly by, the test of this resolution. 32. Resolved, to be strictly and firmly faithful to my trust, that, in Proverbs 26, a faithful man, who can find, may not be partly fulfilled in me. 33. Resolved, to do always what I can towards making, maintaining, and preserving peace, when it can be done without an overbalancing detriment in other respects. December 26, 1722. 34. Resolved, in narrations, never to speak anything but the pure and simple verity. 35. Resolved, whenever I so much question whether I have done my duty, as that my quiet and calm is thereby disturbed, to set it down, and also how the question was resolved. December 18, 1722. 36. Resolved, never to speak evil of any, except I have some particular good call to it. December 19, 1722. 37. Resolved, to inquire every night, as I am going to bed, wherein I have been negligent, what sin I have committed, and wherein I have denied myself. Also, at the end of every week, month, and year. December 22 and 26, 1722. 38. Resolved, never to utter anything that is sportive, or matter of laughter, on a Lord's Day. Sabbath evening, December 23, 1722. 39. Resolved, never to do anything, of which I so much question the lawfulness, as that I intend, at the same time, to consider and examine afterwards, whether it be lawful or not, unless I as much question the lawfulness of the omission. 40. Resolved, to inquire every night before I go to bed, whether I have acted in the best way I possibly could, with respect to eating and drinking. January 7, 1723. 41. Resolved, to ask myself, at the end of every day, week, month, and year, wherein I could possibly, in any respect, have done better. January 11, 1723. 42. Resolved, frequently to renew the dedication of myself to God, which was made at my baptism, which I solemnly renewed when I was received into the communion of the church, and which I have solemnly remade this 12th day of January, 1723. 43. Resolved, never, henceforward, till I die, to act as if I were any way my own, but entirely and altogether God's, agreeably to what is to be found in Saturday, January 12th. January 12th, 1723. 44. Resolved, that no other end but religion shall have any influence at all on any of my actions, and that no action shall be, in the least circumstance, any otherwise than the religious end will carry it. January 12, 1723. 45. Resolved, never to allow any pleasure or grief, joy or sorrow, nor any affection at all, nor any degree of affection, nor any circumstance relating to it, but what helps religion. January 12 and 13, 1723. 46. Resolved, never to allow the least measure of any fretting or uneasiness at my father or mother. Resolved, to suffer no effects of it, so much as in the least alteration of speech, or motion of my eye, and to be especially careful of it with respect to any of our family. 47. Resolved, to endeavor, to my utmost, to deny whatever is not most agreeable to a good and universally sweet and benevolent, quiet, peaceable, contented and easy, compassionate and generous, humble and meek, submissive and obliging, diligent and industrious, charitable and even, patient, moderate, forgiving, and sincere, temper. And to do, at all times, what such a temper would lead me to. And to examine strictly, at the end of every week, whether I have so done. Sabbath morning, May 5, 1723. 48. Resolved, constantly, with the utmost niceness and diligence, and the strictest scrutiny, to be looking into the state of my soul, that I may know whether I have truly an interest in Christ or not. That when I come to die, I may not have any negligence respecting this to repent of. May 26, 1723. 49. Resolved, that this never shall be, if I can help it. 50. Resolved, that I will act so, as I think I shall judge what have been best, and most prudent, when I come into the future world. July 5, 1723. 51. Resolved, that I will act so, in every respect, as I think I shall wish I had done, if I should at last be damned. July 8, 1723. 52. I frequently hear persons in old age say how they would live, if they were to live their lives over again. Resolved, that I will live just so as I can think I shall wish I had done, supposing I live to old age. July 8, 1723. 53. Resolved, to improve every opportunity, when I am in the best and happiest frame of mind, to cast and venture my soul on the Lord Jesus Christ, to trust and confide in Him, and consecrate myself wholly to Him. That from this I may have assurance of my safety, knowing that I confide in my Redeemer. July 8, 1723. 54. Resolved, whenever I hear anything spoken in commendation of any person, if I think it would be praiseworthy in me, that I will endeavor to imitate it. July 8, 1723. 55. Resolved, to endeavor, to my utmost, so to act, as I can think I should do, if I had already seen the happiness of heaven and hell torments. July 8, 1723. 56. Resolved, never to give over, nor in the least to slacken, my fight with my corruptions, however unsuccessful I may be. 57. Resolved, when I fear misfortunes and adversity, to examine whether I have done my duty, and resolve to do it and let the event be just as Providence orders it. I will, as far as I can, be concerned about nothing but my duty and my sin. June 9th and July 13th, 1723. 58. Resolved, not only to refrain from an air of dislike, fretfulness, and anger in conversation, but to exhibit an air of love, cheerfulness, and benignity. May 27th and July 13th, 1723. 59. Resolved, when I am most conscious of provocations to ill nature and anger, that I will strive most to feel and act good-naturedly. Yea, at such times, to manifest good nature, though I think that in other respects it would be disadvantageous, and so as would be imprudent at other times. May 12th, July 11th, and July 13th. 60. Resolved, whenever my feelings begin to appear in the least out of order, when I am conscious of the least uneasiness within, or the least irregularity without, I will then subject myself to the strictest examination. July 4th and 13, 1723. 61. Resolved, that I will not give way to that listlessness which I find unbends and relaxes my mind from being fully and fixedly set on religion, whatever excuse I may have for it, that what my listlessness inclines me to do, is best to be done, etc. May 21st and July 13th, 1723. 62. Resolved, never to do anything but my duty, and then, according to Ephesians 6:6-8, to do it willingly and cheerfully, as unto the Lord, and not to man, knowing that whatever good thing any man doth, the same shall be received of the Lord. June 25th and July 13th, 1723. 63. On the supposition that there never was to be but one individual in the world, at any one time, who was properly a complete Christian, in all respects of a right stamp, having Christianity always shining in its true luster, and appearing excellent and lovely, from whatever part and under whatever character viewed, resolved, to act just as I would do, if I strove with all my might to be that one, Who should live in my time? January 14th and July 13th, 1723. 64. Resolved, when I find those groanings which cannot be uttered, of which the Apostle speaks, and those breathings of soul for the longing it hath, of which the Psalmist speaks, Psalm 119:20, that I will promote them to the utmost of my power, and that I will not be weary of earnestly endeavoring to vent my desires, nor of the repetitions of such earnestness. July 23rd and August 10th, 1723. 65. Resolved, very much to exercise myself in this, all my life long, namely, with the greatest openness of which I am capable, to declare my ways to God, and lay open my soul to Him, all my sins, temptations, difficulties, sorrows, fears, hopes, desires, and everything, and every circumstance, according to Dr. Manton's sermon on the 119th Psalm. July 26th and August 10th, 1723. 66. Resolved, that I will endeavor always to keep a benign aspect, an air of acting and speaking, in all places, and in all companies, except it should so happen that duty requires otherwise. 67. Resolved, after afflictions, to inquire, what I am the better for them, what good I have got by them, and what I might have got by them. 68. Resolved, to confess frankly to myself, all that which I find in myself, either infirmity or sin, and, if it be what concerns religion, also to confess the whole case to God, and implore needed help. July 23rd and August 10th, 1723. 69. Resolved, always to do that, which I shall wish I had done when I see others do it. August 11th, 1723. 70. Let there be something of benevolence in all that I speak. August 17th, 1723. Such were the excellent resolutions formed by Jonathan Edwards at an early period of life, and which in succeeding years were regarded by him, not as unimportant records, but as containing the great principles of the spiritual life. A deep and extensive knowledge of the heart is manifest in these resolutions, a conviction of its defects, a lively apprehension of its dangers, and an intense concern that all its tendencies should be towards God, and towards everything required by His holy will. There is a remarkable tenderness of conscience discovered in every particular which has been stated. The man who could thus write, was not one who could easily trifle with sin, or who could enter any of its paths without the immediate reproofs of an offended conscience. This holy man trembled even at the distant view of sin. He could not willingly come near and survey its enticements. Accustomed to breathe in a holy atmosphere, the least taint of corruption immediately affected his spiritual frame. He knew no happiness except that connected with a conscience void of offense. All these rules were the suggestions of a conscience of a highly enlightened character. They also indicate a constant sense of the presence and exact observations of the searcher of all hearts. The writer lived as seeing Him who is invisible. He set the Lord always before him, encouraging upon all occasions an earnest concern for the glory of God, the grand object for which he desired to live both upon earth and in heaven, an object compared with which all other things seemed in his view but trifles. If this were attained, all his desires were satisfied. But if this were lost or imperfectly gained, his soul was filled with anguish. These resolutions afford ample testimony how much the author had entered into the spirit of 1 Corinthians 10:31. Whether therefore ye eat, or drink, or whatsoever ye do, do all to the glory of God. They also illustrate his views of the importance of consistency of character. He was not content with accurate views of truth, or any kind of outward profession, apart from holy consistency of character. He studied, he admired, and he exhibited the influence of the gospel. A walk worthy of the vocation wherewith he was called was the elevated object at which he ardently aimed. He well knew that the followers of Christ are required to hold forth the word of life, to shine as lights in the world, to instruct by their examples as well as by their words. And he desired to honor God by presenting to the view of the members of the spiritual kingdom, and also of the world, an example which might declare the reality and the beauty of religion. It is further manifest from these resolutions, that his mind was most anxious for daily advancement in every branch of holiness. An active spiritual principle existed in him, which caused him to press forward, whatever might be the obstacles in his way. He could not be contented while one sin remained in him, while one grace was defective, or a single duty engaged in but imperfectly. He longed for the holy perfection of the heavenly world, and anticipated with joy that day when he should awake with the divine likeness. It cannot be a matter of surprise that with these sentiments and feelings he attained an exaltation of character seldom equaled and perhaps never surpassed. The resolutions which have given rise to these reflections are probably, to persons of every age, but especially to the young, the best uninspired summary of Christian duty, the best directory to high attainment in evangelical virtue, which the mind of man has hitherto been able to form. They disclose the writer's own character, and they are admirably calculated to improve the character of every reader who fears to sin, and rejoices in the purity of the divine will.